K-Mud Podcast presents.
Good morning again. I'll introduce myself. My name's Sheila.
I am Danny.
And I'm Wild Ginger.
Yes, and this is The Choice Is Yours.
Yeah, it's the show where we look into the impacts of our consumption. And every month we look at an item of consumption, something that all of us are buying, and we try to find information about the environmental, health, and social issues linked to it.
Yes, because the choices we make may seem insignificant at times, but they can cascade and have major consequences on the world. This is the butterfly effect on the world. And when we're buying an item, we can think about what is this said item? What is the effect going to be?
And this month, we're going to talk about shoes. Shoes are an integral part of everyone's wardrobe, from sneakers to dress shoes. Footwear allows us to comfortably take on our daily activities.
And we all have to regularly buy a new pair. So today's show is about making the best consumer choice next time you do.
And by the way, like we said, Doro's not here today. She is traveling at this very moment. But we want to give a big shout out to her because at times some of us can't jump in and do as much research. And she really held it down for the show and did most of the research and writing. So
Thanks, Doro. Really appreciate you. And she did tell us this great story that happened to her friend Pascal. We love Pascal. And so let's start with that because it does highlight how much our feet are important to our health and really a lot more than we even think.
Yeah. So her friend has a child who is dealing with sleep apnea. And first they went to an allopathic doctor who advised them to surgically remove the adenoid. They did go through with this, and afterwards, the child still had sleep apnea. So then they went again, and then the doctor prescribed various medications to take every day until a friend of theirs, who happened to be a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner, told her to put his feet up to the ankle in soil every day for 18 minutes for 1 month, to do that every day. And they did that, and that did it. It worked. After only 10 days, her child was sleeping properly, and now it's been about 1 year and is still holding. Wow.
That's amazing. I love the 18 minutes like exactness. They're like, we know what we're doing. This is not an experiment. And we're not saying this will work for everyone. It depends on a lot of factors, but we are sharing this story because it means that there's a lot more than we think going on with our feet.
Yeah, our feet are connected to the earth after all. Our feet are incredibly complex structures designed to support our bodies and absorb shock naturally. They consist of 26 bones, 33 joints, and over 100 muscles, tendons, and ligaments, all working together to provide balance and movement.
And first, we have to realize that humans are the only fully bipedal primates and have been bipedal for up to 7 million years. During most of the course of our evolution, getting to our modern anatomy, we performed all activities barefoot. It is only relatively recently, about 30,000 years ago, that we started to wear shoes.
So before we discuss footwear, it's important to briefly consider barefoot walking. So wearing shoes is quite singular because we've not used to date other items of clothing that are going to affect us biomechanically. For example, we don't wear, you know, supportive head collars every day unless perhaps there's a medical reason or in some cases there's a cultural reason.
Yeah, so throughout our history and at an increasing pace, humans have excelled at unnatural inventions that have greatly helped us. In principle, it's possible that daily footwear is one such invention.
So our first question is, why do we wear shoes? Well, protection from the cold, maybe infections, cleanliness, and avoiding injury, right?
There's a study in the National Library of Medicine. It's called Footwear Choice and Locomotor Health Throughout the Life Course. This is a critical review which says that in some cases, the effects of the cold, infections, dirt, and injury may not be as straightforward as assumed. So, for example, local habituation of the feet to the cold develops relatively easily, and naturally developed calluses offer mechanical protection.
Yeah, I think we've all experienced that a little bit. In the first few days of spring, when you're walking barefoot for the first time, it feels a little more sensitive and cold. But yeah, just even after a few days or a week, it seems like my feet have developed eyes and they can avoid the stones more easily and the thistle. And I can just kind of walk with some more ease.
I
had a friend in college. His name was Dave, and he was always barefoot, even in the Wisconsin winters, walking through the snow. And he was like, no, my feet aren't cold. I'm fine.
Oh boy!
Yeah, and
it's hardcore.
Yeah, there's tons of people in the area who have like these amazingly like strong feet who are walking barefoot all the time. You know, Douglas being like one of them, and it's so awesome. So we just want to give a shout out to all the people who do that every day already.
I'm mostly barefoot at home, which is such a treat.
But yes,
there's a long gravel driveway that. Most people are not able to walk on, but I'm like, you know what? I've trained my feet for this. So
nice job.
I really enjoy walking barefoot. And not all footwear allows for unrestricted movement and the use of all foot muscles and structures. Additionally, barefoot individuals often exhibit a more natural arch and foot shape because the foot is not constrained by the shoe's structure.
So it's pretty clear that barefoot is a more natural way, but does it impact our health?
A study found that barefoot South African children had better balance but lower sprint speed than German children who wore shoes. So I'd say better for the health, but maybe not as good for performance. Although there is a story of Maria Lorena Ramirez, a 22-year-old woman who won the 2017 31-mile marathon in Puebla, Mexico, wearing traditional sandals made from recycled rubber tires.
That is amazing.
I know. I love that story.
That's yes. So cool.
Yeah.
And by the way, everyone listening, all the studies that we are mentioning, they are going to be in the footnotes of our podcast episodes. So just go to your favorite podcast app in a few days. The episode will be there under KMUD, The Choice is Yours, and it's going to have links to all the studies we're talking about this morning.
And this is also a good point in the show to remind you that we are not investigative journalists or scientists.
Yes.
No.
We definitely aren't. We do spend, you know, hours of time researching, looking on, you know, the internet for studies and articles that seem trustworthy, and then we're going to compile them into the show. And then the show's here to, you know, mainly stimulate your curiosity and ask you to do your own research and analysis.
Right. Okay, so back to studies about barefoot walking. There's another one that studied over 5,000 habitually barefoot people from China and India, and it found that foot defects were very rare, 9% for all conditions studied, and non-debilitating, and suggested that shoes are not necessary for healthy feet and are the cause of most foot troubles.
Yes.
Pretty clearly said.
Wow, yes. And another study found that the unshoed foot has then a thicker protective skin, a wider forefoot, and a much lower incidence of hallux valgus. That is 1.9% versus 33%. And cases of flat foot were rare and asymptomatic.
Hallux valgus, you say? That would be a great band name.
Right?
Yeah.
Our new side project. I love that. And for those who don't know what that is, some people call it a hammer toe or a bunion. It's a bony bump that forms at the base of your big toe, and it can be very painful. Mm-hmm. So maybe not a great name.
I don't know. Even hammer toe could be a good band.
Okay,
metal
yeah,
name.
I'm liking that.
Hammer
liking
toe. That.
We are hammer toe.
Another study we came across found that foot complaints are rare in Africa and India, where people are barefoot more often or wear sandals without heels. It showed that people who have lower arches have different foot dynamics and more equal pressure distribution.
All the studies mentioned here and more suggest that habitually barefoot people have healthy feet and well-developed arches and low incidence of foot pathologies like flat feet or hallux valgus.
You know, recently was at the podiatrist and he was mentioning that he thinks it's really important to walk barefoot outside, but that when you're on solid ground made by man, like your hard concrete floors, that it's probably better to have some support under your foot. But when you're outside, it's better to be
That's
barefoot.
That's really good to know.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, in the shoe industry, shoes without a heel at all that have a flat bed can be called zero drop shoes. So you can like look for them that way online if you want.
Cool.
Very cool. Yeah, I just want to throw out there, too. It's like the bubbling well is this acupressure point on the very bottom of the foot. And it's on the kidney channel. So it's like on a water channel, but it's this earth point. And that's like the point that's like connecting us to the earth force beneath us. Mm. And I just love thinking about like grounding outside in our garden and just really,
yes,
like standing in like solidly in that stance. And it's, I mean, that's one of the most powerful points. So imagining just really connecting with the earth with that.
Love that.
Is important. Okay, but we are going to talk about long-term health consequences. We found two studies, and they do talk about specific ailments.
One said that knee loading is decreased in osteoarthritis patients when walking barefoot or wearing minimal shoes compared to conventional shoes.
And in the other one, it says, in users of prosthetic hips, barefoot and minimally shoed walking reduced joint loading compared to conventionally shoed walking. But it is safe to assume that also for walking and even more for running, a transition to minimally shoed or barefoot locomotion needs to be gradual.
Yeah. And have you listeners out there heard about, on you two ladies, earthing or grounding? Yeah.
As a lifestyle.
Totally. So yeah, for all of you listening, this is the idea that walking barefoot and sitting on the ground or even sleeping on the ground is going to be overall amazing for your health.
You know, I've also seen shoes online that have like little copper inserts.
Yeah, grounding points.
Yeah, that are supposed to, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That same thing. Those are hard to find.
Considering getting me a pair.
Me too.
They're an investment, but I think it's absolutely worth it.
It does. They are kind of spendy.
Yeah.
Especially if you can just like walk outside instead.
I know. I'm like, actually, I'm just not going to wear shoes. How about that? Cheap option.
Multidisciplinary research has revealed that electronically conductive contact of the human body with the surface of the earth, grounding or earthing, produces intriguing effects on psychology and health. Such effects relate to inflammation, immune response, wound healing, and prevention and treatment of chronic inflammatory and autoimmune diseases.
That's enough for me. Wow.
Right?
And that relates to our first story about healing sleep apnea by covering your feet with the earth. You know, it's really powerful stuff.
Yeah, sounds good. Show's over. Go barefoot. It's cheaper.
Cool. We learned our lesson. Voila. Thanks for tuning in.
Yep. Bye.
Bye. Have a good
day. Wait. Okay. So there's also the social and cultural reasons to wear shoes. And in the world where we live in now, it would be difficult to just stop wearing shoes all the time.
I don't know. Our station manager, Rich, goes barefoot.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this population's kind of figured it out a little bit more. I did do it last time I was in LA, and I was like walking around with my friend, walking her dog in like a nice residential area. And I'm like, we're just going on a dog walk. I don't need my shoes. And it was just like all of a sudden we're on a main street. There's traffic. It just felt like
you're looking
vulnerable.
For
I was feeling vulnerable, uh-huh. You know?
I have to build my feet up to it. Yeah. I still, because of like growing up in the society of being like, put these, you know, mm-hmm. shoes on all the time and things, like in my garden I can do it, but I find my feet are pretty weak.
Yeah.
Because I haven't had like my lifetime of
training.
Of all that training. So yeah. I need to get there. You know, and maybe barefoot all the time isn't for everyone. But maybe after you listen to this show, you're gonna think about it more often. And maybe, you know, like Danny said, you could be barefoot in your garden, at home, in your office, you know, keep all the benefits in mind.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite stories was I was walking through Fern Canyon and I was going barefoot and there was some two young college kids that saw me and were like floored and just felt like, you gave us permission to walk this thing barefoot. Like, we know we can do it. And I almost started crying because it just felt like, oh, giving someone permission to just connect with the earth in this beautiful space. And like, yes, boys, go barefoot. Be free, yes. Young ones. Enjoy. Yes.
Humboldt is a good place to be there.
It is. It is good. And yeah, those shoes that Ginger was talking about called zero drop or minimal footwear. This is footwear that aims at replicating barefoot walking and is typically flexible, foot shaped, and without features such as cushioning, arch support, or a raised heel. There are several brands like Vivo Barefoot, Merrell, Zero, Lems. Yeah, just look into it. Make a little Google search and you can find something. And there are many great alternatives for people who don't have a lifestyle where they can walk barefoot very often.
Hey, I thought this was a show about shoes, and so far all we're talking about is not wearing shoes.
Okay, I guess let's get to the shoes, huh? So while we are talking about health, let's briefly talk about shoes with heels, because this is a dangerous one,
yes.
In case you didn't know.
Oh my gosh, I actually broke my elbow falling in
high
heels.
No, girl.
I didn't even know you
tragic.
Could do that till I did it. And it did it in front of a whole bunch of people at an event. It was so terrible. So in general, shoes with an elevated heel, even those that are modest supportive ones, shift your weight forward and throw off your natural alignment. They can cause knee pain, lower back issues, and poor posture.
Wow, and broken bones. Yeah,
exactly.
Wearing high heel shoes throughout your day for long periods of time places added stress and pressure on various parts of your body. This extra stress can harmfully affect not only your knees, but also your hips, your lower back, and Achilles tendon.
Yeah, you might not even realize it, but that stiff neck could be traced back to your footwear.
Yeah, and according to the Cleveland Clinic, hallux valgus bunions are the most common foot issue associated with long-term high heel wearing, but it also increases the risk of the hammer toe.
Research shows over 70% of women who wear high heels often experience pain or a long-term impairment.
Oh,
so
no.
I got to say,
that's enough for
yeah,
me.
High heels don't make you beautiful. They make you look like you're hurting yourself.
Yeah, it's a little sad. And yeah, what about the cost?
Yeah, we have to think about that because if women are more, this is another thing then that's going to be affecting women more.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
And like who created the shoes and all the things. Like, I don't know all the background of that.
Oh,
but
I can tell you really fast.
Oh, sure.
High heels were invented when people rode horseback so you wouldn't be stepping in poo in the road.
Aha.
So if you don't ride horseback, you don't need high heels.
Yeah, totally. And then we're wondering about flip-flops too, because summer's coming. It's so nice to wear, you know, sandals again. But is it harmful or is it just like barefoot walking?
Actually, unfortunately, studies say that walking in flip-flops regularly can contribute to a variety of foot and lower extremity issues. So
yeah, it can put extra strain on your Achilles tendon, and the lack of cushioning in flip-flops can put excessive pressure on the ball of your foot. Mm. And changing your gait and posture is caused by flip-flops, and they can also contribute to back pain. The lack of support can throw your body out of alignment, leading to muscle strain and discomfort.
But that's only, I guess, if you wear them too long or you're on uneven terrain or you're doing, you know, an athletic sport.
Don't play soccer in flip-flops.
I've tried. Oh, man. So, yeah, like everything, flip-flops have to be consumed with moderation. Usually a big key point in our show, huh?
And other things to pay attention to when choosing your shoes is the thickness of the soles.
And if you wear shoes with thick soles and built-in arch support, your foot muscles aren't engaged as much as they should be. Over time, they weaken, leading to instability and increased risk of injury. Think of it like putting your feet in a cast. They're not moving, so they're not getting any stronger. And yeah, actually, my stepdad had his arches collapse because of this.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever notice how shoes squeeze your toes into unnatural shapes?
Yeah, it's not healthy. And over time, it can lead to painful deformities like the bunion and the hammer toe, leaving your feet sore and potentially requiring medical attention down the line.
Yeah, so again, try to find shoes that resemble a natural barefoot walking as much as possible. And then where and when you can wear other types of shoes, do it with moderation.
Yeah, so you're looking for a square toe instead of a pointy toe on mm-hmm. your shoe. That's like mm-hmm. number one. And it's not as easy to find as you might wish. So walking with athletic shoes might be the best option. It provides better cushioning and support. It also helps absorb impact and reduces stress on the feet joints.
All right, so we're going to move on now. We're going to talk about the market.
All right. So the United States has the largest footwear market in the world, generating over $97.4 billion U.S. dollars in revenue in just 2024.
Yeah. Keep in mind that Americans are only 4% of the whole planet.
Oh my gosh.
And 18% of the world market then is in India, 16% in China, meaning then that Americans, you know, like Ginger just said, they are consuming way more shoes per person than the rest of the world.
Yeah. And how many pairs of shoes per capita per year? What do you think? Listener, let's take a second, be honest with yourself. And how many shoes do you actually consume per year?
Yeah.
A good question.
That is really a good question. According to the shoe industry research that we found, teens and young adults purchase more shoes per capita than any other age group. Teenagers 13 to 17 years old, they purchase the highest number of shoes per person annually. The average teen bought approximately 8 pairs of shoes in 2019.
I told my teenager that quote, and he was like, no, that's not not in Humboldt.
Yeah, the teenagers
are a boy, though, right?
Yeah, he's a boy, so maybe that's part of it. But he did ask for shoes for his birthday.
Okay.
Which he already has 3 pair. Yeah. Anyway,
but it does seem
excessive.
It's excessive. And it seems like there's a few reasons for this. So there's the fashion trends, you know, when you're younger, you got to keep up with what's hot and relevant. And then there's active lifestyles. So with like school, sports, jobs, social activities, teens log a lot of miles with their shoes and need replacements often.
I guess. And it's also because teenagers' feet are still growing. So they need new shoes every few months. And it's likely that young consumers have more disposable income to buy fashion.
That too.
Yeah. And apparently sneakers account for over 2/3 of all shoe sales to teenagers.
8 pairs of shoes a year. Wow. So yeah, we'll talk in a minute about environmental impacts of all of that shoe manufacturing. And I hope all those teens are listening because 8 pairs is too much. The world cannot take it.
Yeah.
As we move progressively higher in age, people above 30 purchase shoes way less.
And maybe because we still have the shoes that we bought in the last decade that we don't wear that much. Yeah. We're just hoarding them at this point.
Yeah. And these are how many new pairs of shoes per age bracket that broken down. Okay. So ages 18 through 29, it's estimated 6 to 7 pairs per year. Ages 30 to 44, 5 pairs per year. 45 to 54, 4 pairs per year. And age 55 plus, 3 pairs per year. I just want to say with age two, I know when I was younger, I would buy the junkiest shoes.
Yeah.
And then.
Like jelly shoes?
Yeah.
Those are making a comeback, I noticed,
so
when
bad
I was in LA.
Beth.
Oh yeah. And you're wearing them out so quickly, so they turn into trash quickly. I think definitely with age and just for support of my foot, I've learned you do have to put more into buying like a quality pair of shoes.
Oh, for sure.
That's then going to last you.
Cannot buy a cheap pair of shoes these days.
I also have an addiction to buying used shoes at thrift stores when they're like really expensive brands. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is my size. I'm buying it. And then of course it doesn't fit right because that's why someone got rid of it.
You've helped me out so many times with shoes because we have the same size or that you've passed on to me. So it's another thing, passing on shoes.
Dude, share your shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, make friends with people who have the same foot size as you. I recommend it.
I love that. It could be a new friend dating app.
Yeah. Oh, a new app just for shoe friends.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the environmental impacts of shoe manufacturing.
Okay, let's do it. So the geographic distribution of footwear production has remained relatively unchanged over the past decade. Just as in 2010, Asia continues to dominate. Producing more than 87% of the world's footwear. That is almost 9 out of every 10 pairs of shoes they are produced in this region.
Wow. And the industry began hopscotching across Asia in pursuit of lower costs and wages in the 1970s. This is when brands like Nike, a newcomer at the time, turned to factories in South Korea and Taiwan to ramp up as sneaker culture took hold in the United States.
Vietnam was making its own disruptive changes to the communist-controlled economy. By the early 2000s, China's neighbor to the south was also growing its production, letting China provide more for its own market.
But since last year, Trump's tariffs moved everything again, threatening Vietnam with a 46% tariff and finally agreeing on 20%. The uncertainty that Trump's tariffs have caused over costs is forcing a reckoning in the industry. And now companies worried about being too dependent on any one country are also debating whether to move to work out of Vietnam.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
The shoe industry produces over 23 to 25 billion pairs annually, with 90 to 95% ending up in landfills. So obviously this is contributing heavily to pollution through non-biodegradable synthetic materials. Manufacturing accounts for 1.4% of global greenhouse gas emissions, requiring immense water usage, up to 8,000 liters per pair, and toxic chemicals. Key issues include leather tanning pollution, petroleum-based plastics, and poor recyclability.
Wow. That is so intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And about greenhouse gases, we looked into a study with the cradle-to-grave approach. This refers to all the activities involved in the life cycle of a footwear product, starting from the raw material extraction, manufacturing, use, maintenance, and in the end, disposal. The results show that the total carbon footprint for a pair of safety boots is 18.65 kilograms of CO2 equivalent, and with the component manufacture stage as a major contributor, accumulating almost 80%.
So what is 18 kilograms of CO2?
Well, apparently it's like driving 56 miles. So it's nearly as much of producing a kilogram of beef.
Well, that doesn't seem too much for a pair of shoes. I mean, if you keep your shoes for years and use them until the end, it actually seems to me like a better investment of our Earth's resources than eating beef or driving.
So the problem isn't really one pair of shoes. It's the quantity of shoes people are buying, right?
Yeah, but also when we talk about the environment, we have to consider two more impacts. Which resources are needed to fabricate the shoes, and what happens when we throw them away?
Okay, so firstly, some shoes are being made with leather.
While most leather produced globally is created with animal skin from cattle and sheep, there is a wide variety of animal species that are killed to make leather, most notably cattle, but also pigs, goats, sheep, crocodiles, snakes, stingrays, seals, rabbits, emus, deer, fish, kangaroos, horses, cats, and dogs. Even baby animals don't escape the leather industry, with the skins of calves, kids, and lambs considered a particularly valuable raw material by the industry because of its softness.
I looked into this, and I will not tell you the details, but it is absolutely terrifying what they do to these poor, let me say this, I'm sorry, unborn animals.
Yeah.
Also, there's no regulations on the way that you treat crocodiles or snakes. There's a lot of animals that don't have those regulations. So there's been found like huge, huge barns full of thousands of alligators with like no room for them to even walk around.
Oh, horrible.
Awful. Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of day-old bobby calves are born into the dairy industry, and they're slaughtered every single year with their skins then used to make shoes and other products for the fashion industry.
I mean, yeah, they would be killed anyway because the milk of the mother has to be kept for the dairy industry. So we don't need that many males. So I guess why not use their skins? And in a way, it is more sustainable than just throwing them away. And it may sound cruel, but somewhat logical.
But then there's wild animals that are being hunted and killed for the fashion industry. And that's not logical nor sustainable.
Right. The kangaroos, one of Australia's most iconic animals, until recently were being killed in their millions every year with their skins used to make sports shoes, gloves, accessories, and souvenirs. Leather made from kangaroo skins is referred to as K-leather by the industry.
Wow. The Australian and global community were outraged. They placed pressure on sporting brands to end this barbaric slaughter.
This has been effective as of January 1st, 2026. Adidas, New Balance, and ASICS have officially ceased using kangaroo leather and footwear products. Combined with previous commitments from Nike, Puma, Sokito, and Diadora, plus pledges from Umbro and Mizuno, nine major athletic footwear companies have now ended or committed to ending the practice in what advocates call an unprecedented corporate animal welfare victory.
Wow. Yeah. And
amazing.
Yes. And it's so great to share this news because, you know, consumers and the people come together, they don't support these practices, and then they make an impact on the industry.
Yeah. Amazing. But okay, let's not get too enthusiastic and let's talk about the cats and the dogs first.
Okay. Ah. Yeah. So China, the world's largest exporter of leather, it kills millions of cats and dogs for their skin. India's leather trade is also one of the biggest in the world, and as many of the country's provinces forbid the slaughter of sacred cows, then these animals are often forced to walk long distances across borders to then be brutally killed in neighboring provinces and countries. And along this grueling journey, the exhausted animals, they can be beaten. They've been tortured. There's been stories of chili and tobacco rubbed into their eyes to make them to keep walking. Like, that is so horrific.
That's terrible.
Yeah, that is awful.
And then there's no requirement to label leather products. So this makes it extremely difficult and often impossible for us consumers then to know which species of animal the leather has come from and in which country they were raised and where and that it, they were killed for their skin. You know, we just don't have that information as consumers.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. And let's go further. While leather is often promoted as being a natural fiber, the tanning methods used can involve an array of toxic chemicals which permanently alter the protein structure of the skin.
Workers in some international tanneries, they've been documented to suffer from skin diseases and respiratory illnesses caused by their exposure to these tanning chemicals. These chemicals, including chromium salt, can also cause extreme pollution to the air, to our soil, to water, resulting in then devastating effects to the local human and the animal populations.
And actually, it's not only for the leather. Many stages in the shoe manufacturing cycle include toxins, chemicals, and fossil fuels that leak into the environment.
One of the most popular types of footwear, like we said, is sneakers. And according to a Rutgers University study, sneaker materials are created from harmful chemicals such as benzene, toluene, ethyl benzene, and xylene. These toxins can cause cancer, disrupt our nervous system, and irritate respiratory system.
Can I just say really quick how weird that is that we're putting these toxic chemicals on the bottom of our feet because that's where you absorb things mostly.
Yeah.
It's like, look out. That
is so dangerous.
Scary. Yeah.
Worth the investment for a good quality pair of shoes. Yes. That's good for the environment and good for your body. It can change your whole health.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's amazing. So then the industry uses a bunch of fuel to transport the shoes from Asia to the U.S. where you buy it. And then when shoes get old, people tend to toss them in the garbage. The shoes that end up in landfills and the chemicals used in shoe production start to leak into the soil and the waterways.
So I guess to conclude here, if we minimize how many shoes we're using, less chemicals are going to end up, you know, affecting the lungs of these Asian workers and also getting into the waterways, affecting, you know, the animals and the people.
Yeah. And if you're not done with your shoe, well, you're done with your shoe, you didn't like the way it fit, you can always donate it to a thrift store.
That's true. Someone else might love them.
So as Danny was saying, there are solutions and the fashion industry is responding to our demand for more sustainable practices, especially in footwear.
As we said, traditional shoe production often involves the use of materials and processes that harm both the planet and its inhabitants. However, thanks to innovative designers and brands, there are now plenty of eco-friendly alternatives available.
Those brands use new materials to make their shoes. Organic cotton is a key material being used. This is grown without the use of synthetic pesticides and fertilizers, and it's not genetically modified.
They also use recycled rubber obtained from old tires, which are shredded and processed to create a durable material that can be utilized in various shoe components, but especially the outsoles that need to withstand daily wear and tear.
Sustainable shoes may also contain cork. You know, cork is used in wine stoppers and bulletin boards. It's harvested from the outer bark of a cork tree, which naturally then regenerates itself, making it a renewable source.
Wow.
So cool.
Yeah.
This unique harvesting process does not harm the tree. It allows it to live and continue producing cork for up to 200 years. Obviously, the production of cork is limited due to the scarcity of these trees, but it is such an amazing material.
Yeah, if you haven't seen a cork tree,
I have not.
They are really, really special. Their bark can be like 5 inches thick, and it's spongy, just like a cork. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh!
And cork is incredibly lightweight and water resistant. It provides cushioning and comfort for the wearer, replacing petroleum based foams of conventional shoes. Cork is also biodegradable because it's just from the tree, and it reduces environmental impact even further. I've even seen cork flooring, so that you can be barefoot in your house and it's nice and soft.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
That sounds amazing.
You can look up a cork tree.
It's not cheap, but it's really squishy.
I can imagine.
Another interesting material being used is on hemp fibers. It's incredibly strong and durable, making it ideal for creating long-lasting shoes. The material's breathable, it's moisture wicking, it keeps your feet comfortable and dry.
Some of the most eco-friendly shoes on the market today are made using bamboo. Bamboo is a versatile and fast-growing plant that requires minimal water and no pesticides to thrive. It grows rapidly, sometimes up to several feet per day, making it an abundant and easily replenishable resource. Additionally, bamboo plants release 35% more oxygen into the atmosphere compared to other trees, further contributing to environmental health.
Sustainable shoes also use recycled PET plastic. This material helps to decrease the demand for new plastic production, which in turn then reduces the consumption of fossil fuels and energy in the manufacturing process. This recycled PET plastic is durable and versatile. It can be transformed into various shoe components, such as uppers, linings, and even soles. The material retains its quality and functionality. It offers the same performance as new plastic, but with significantly lower environmental footprint.
And organically tanned leather. This leather is colored from vegetable-based tanning agents like gallnuts, quebracho wood, mimosa trees, and others, or by natural mineral dyes. Unlike traditional chrome tanned leather, the production of vegetable tanned leather does not require chromium 3 and other toxic chemicals.
Another alternative to chrome tanned leather is Piñatex. It's made from pineapple leaf fibers, a byproduct of the pineapple industry. It is not only biodegradable and cruelty free, but it also provides additional income to the farmers.
Yeah, I've even read there's shoe leather made from apple cores and skins and grape skins left over from the wine industry.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to look into that. I wonder what those shoes look like. And there are more. There's the cactus-made leather, algae-based foam, mushroom leather, and obviously going back to the traditional materials like wool.
Yeah, and hey, there also were wood shoes back in the day. I don't know if people want to go back, but we could be clogging.
I would love to actually support that movement. I had a pair of clogs when I was like 10.
It wasn't painful to wear them? You don't remember.
I think I remember the fun of the shoe more than the comfort.
Yeah. Totally. Did you dance?
Oh, yeah. You have to.
You've got
clogs on. You got to clog around.
Yeah, great.
It's a respectful thing to do. Yeah. And as a consumer, you can play your part in creating a sustainable footwear industry just by consuming those new types of shoes. And nowadays, there are many brands and styles available in those materials. And usually, they don't only go for eco-friendly, but also to be socially responsible. These sustainable shoe brands follow strict ethical practices in their processes, including ensuring fair wages and safe working environments. We love that.
Yeah, we're going to list them here, but you'll have to look into it to find the ones that you like. There's Aloha's, Allbirds, Reformation, Loci, Cezanne, El Naturalista, Kariuma, Vivea, I might be mispronouncing some of these.
That's
Quince,
okay.
P448, Veja, Abel. Yeah.
Do your research.
Yeah,
look it up
research,
online.
Folks. Yeah,
Doro even found sustainable rain boots, which are very important in Humboldt. Mm-hmm. They're made of 100% recycled windshield glass resin.
Okay.
Wow.
That feels really counterintuitive.
Right? That brand is called Matt and Nat. Just type sustainable shoes and you'll be surprised to find how many shoe brands there are out there.
Another cool innovation is that many companies are beginning to adopt a take back policy for their products.
Cool.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah. Over the last 3 decades, Nike has, through its Reuse a Shoe program, collected worn out shoes to make the Nike Grind. Nike's Director of Sustainable Business and Innovation proudly announced, "The recycled shoes are given new life. They are reborn into sports and playground services around the world."
Do you guys remember Chacos, those sandals?
Yeah.
Oh,
remember
yeah.
how you used to be able to mail them back to Colorado and uh-huh. they put new soles on them or like replace the straps when your dog chewed them up?
A lifetime shoe.
Yeah. So I don't know if they still do that. I wonder. While your shoes may look like they have reached the end of their life, someone may still appreciate them, so you can always send them to a thrift store or mm-hmm. donate them to a local houseless person yeah. who might really be grateful.
Yeah. or to an organization like soulsforsouls.org. This organization says when you donate a pair of shoes to Souls for Souls, it's more than just cleaning out your closet, and you're helping the planet and changing someone's life.
DIYNcrafts.com is a website that helps visitors with creative ideas that then use old things to make interesting stuff. One of the exciting projects on the site is using old baby shoes to make pin cushions.
That sounds so cute.
And who doesn't love when you show up at someone's house and they have an old work boot with flowers growing out of it?
Oh,
I love
yeah,
that.
I do too.
It's a little classier than like the toilet front yard vibe. I love this show topic because we had so much good news to share along with the bad news that we needed to announce.
Right? It's not always the case. Sometimes we're just all gloom.
Right?
All facts.
And so we're going to embrace the positive solutions in place. And then we're, you know, let's all try to consume more sustainable shoes.
Yeah, for our health,
yeah.
For the planet's health.
Yes.
But really, I feel like it can just make such a big difference in our relationship with the earth and the planet.
Yeah.
Yeah, the choice is yours, or no shoes at all. We do want to open up the lines to callers.
Yeah, does anybody have information they want to share about shoes they love or hate?
Yeah, the number here is 707-923-3911. Call in. I'll put you on the air. And Ginger, you had something you were going to read from, right, or share?
Oh, yeah, this is so interesting. Okay, so our station manager, Rich, is shoeless most of the time, and he made this huge poster to explain why. So until somebody gives us a holler, I'm going to just read some of the information on his poster. It says,
it's very beautifully written. It's on this classy frame. It's like a very – it looks like a professional law document.
It really does. It says, going barefoot, it's a spiritual connection. Being barefoot makes me feel in touch with the ground. Feeling each bump and vibe from the earth keeps me alert. The temperature changes. Keep me grounded and less stressed. I feel the energy of the spirits absorbed in the earth below me. It's also an attitude. Being barefoot. Oh, good. Let's hear.
You're on the air, caller.
Hi. This is a great show because shoes, yeah, are important to me. And I am a real barefooter. A lot of times just like, oh, I get these shoes off, you know, and go walk outside. Also, it's interesting. I don't know if you notice there's things on social media and online and whatnot about grounding shoes and stuff like that. I feel like just saying, just take your shoes off and go outside. But one thing I wanted to say was, like, when we were kids, our mom was not a big fan of, like, we were three girls, so of course we had hand-me-downs and da-da-da, but not the shoes. You got your own shoes. New shoes were, like, taboo for her.
Yeah.
Because every foot is so different. And, you know, I used to always, I was a runner as a kid and stuff, and I always had a pair of sneakers or tennis shoes or whatever, but I don't know, they started to put way more plastic in them and stuff. It's not like there wasn't some plastic there anyways, but when they really started coming out with all the big plasticky sneakers, I probably haven't had a pair at least 30 years.
Wow.
Just couldn't do it. It
yeah.
just really didn't work for me. And I tend to keep my shoes a long time. The oldest shoes I have are from like 2000 or something, and they're the best two are Birkenstocks because
oh, nice.
They don't have that much plastic. They do have a plastic bed, but you know, they do have a cork in there, but you know, there's a lot of leather in there. I don't know. I haven't had a new pair, so I don't know what they're like.
No, you're definitely right. Birkenstocks, we didn't mention, they have a cork sole. They have rubber, or excuse me, they have leather
yeah.
as their upper, and they have
yeah.
metal buckles. They're pretty much very minimal on plastic. That's a good
yeah.
point. And then
yeah.
I just thought of Doc Martens use those rubber soles as well,
oh.
which is probably
yeah.
better for your feet. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely tend to look for leather, and I have become kind of a Keen fan because
yes, those are great shoes.
Don't
too.
Have wide feet and stuff necessarily, but I don't like my toes all cramped up.
Exactly. A lot of shoes
That's
are made for a narrow
big,
foot.
Yep,
big dewy for me. And one other thing I started thinking about lately was because I heard an article about well, you know, there's all this thing about plastics migrating into our bodies.
Yeah.
And I read something about, like, specifically Crocs and
oh,
people
yeah.
wearing Crocs.
That's a super big trend right now with young kids, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And I started thinking about because I saw some of my friends. I know they don't want to do vaccines for their kids, and they're really on the organic food.
But then they put plastic shoes on their feet. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to say anything.
Oh, you should say something.
We'll say something. We made an hour this morning to
Crocs
say something.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Thanks for calling.
Really thank you for calling. Super useful information.
Great show. Great show.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. Okay, caller, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Hey, do you folks, have you heard of Wildling?
No, what's this one?
Wildling. You should check them out. It's a German shoe company, but I think they have a outlet in the Bay Area now.
Oh, yeah?
It's all natural, all beautiful. It's like really wonderful.
Yeah,
it's
I just looked really them up online. They actually are beautiful shoes, too.
Yeah, they're incredible.
Wow, cool. Wildling.
Wildling.
Wow, yeah. These are beautiful.
I'm like, where?
Where?
Yeah, you're gonna love them. They're kind of like pets.
Wow.
You know, it is funny how you can get so addicted to shoes, and like they're like once I bought red Keens and I was like, I just feel like a different person in red shoes. Like you're saying something.
It's a statement.
It is
a statement piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I feel that way when I get a new pair of shoes. I'm like, more fun, more funky, less just like run of the mill. Like,
right. These
are a statement.
Wow, these Wildlings aren't even expensive.
No, they're very affordable. Cool. Thanks for that recommendation.
Thanks,
yeah,
caller.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks so much. Yeah, the worst shoe I've ever worn was jelly shoes. I remember as a child having like terrible blisters all the time, but they were so cute. I just couldn't stop
kind of
begging
just, like,
for them.
Grin, you know,
grin and bear it. Yeah. There was glitter in there.
I know you have to.
And I always wonder about the kids' shoes that light up. Like, are they still made with mercury? Is that still a thing? Because like light up shoes are so exciting, but like. Why do they light up?
Huh.
I never thought
about that either. Was that the case? Mercury?
I believe originally, but okay. I don't know if that's still true. I just know they never made them for grown-ups, and it made me mad.
Yeah.
Like, why don't we have shoes that light up?
Let's get an organic, all-natural, sustainable footwear brand that has light-up shoes for adults.
Oh, yeah.
No mercury.
It's happening.
Something's happening. Putting it out into the world.
Great. And I didn't mean to interrupt you, Ginger, when you were reading that before.
Oh, no, that's fine. Yes, I could just say the highlights. You know, Rich's poster says that it's a spiritual connection. It's an attitude. It's a political statement because there are actually no... it says nowhere has any health service ever supported anti-barefoot laws. And actually, in the state of California, you are protected as a person with the right to go barefoot for religious, cultural, medical, or disability reasons. You're allowed to go in restaurants, grocery stores, theaters, government buildings, gyms, museums, libraries, amusement parks, trains, and buses.
Wow.
That's really good to know.
Yeah, especially because there's so many signs and, you know, a beach town wants to have a nice place. They're like, must wear shoes and a shirt or whatever the thing is.
It kind of seems to me that shoes bring in more sand than bare feet.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean? Like, that just seems like counterintuitive.
My house
is a
mess when I'm walking in and out with shoes. And if I'm just walking barefoot for the whole day, it's like I'm not tracking stuff around.
Right, because you can feel what's on the bottom and wipe it off before you walk in.
Yeah.
For real.
Well, I want to thank Doro again. She wasn't here with us today. She'll be back in the future.
Nice. I know. We miss you, Doro.
Tons
it's never
of great
the same
information,
without you.
Right?
I wonder if you're barefoot right now, Dorothy.
I bet she is.
Yeah, I hope so.
Blast. I'm wondering if we want to look up bamboo next time and see how sustainable bamboo is, because I've heard rumors that it's not as sustainable as it claims.
I have also heard that.
And also the teepee sometimes made of bamboo can be less than perfect.
That's generous.
All right. Well, thank you to everyone for tuning in. Keep it tuned to The Mud.
This has been a KMUD podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.